Yossi Mizrahi. The panelists will ask their own questions. We have pre-written questions. Not their own questions. Questions that people ask over Shabbos. If someone asks questions, they feel free to raise your hand, and one of the panelists will reply to you. Thank you. Enjoy.
So we have to read the questions also?
Yeah.
We have to read it. So, good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone. We will start with the first question. How do I explain to my kids that we don't eat all echsherim? You know, even the one that we see other yidden from his community eating it. So it's one of the of what we say. It's a confusions among the communities is that even though, you know, it's considered one chassidut or one community, sometimes people will eat all kinds of different echsherim that the actual authority of that chassidut does not allow, that does not approve. Okay, so how do we explain? This question is a little bit more complicated than just echsherim, because you're going to have a lot of disagreements over the years that they're going to have to face. Because based on what they learn over here in this cheder, this is the right way and this is the wrong way. And one later on, when they go to different yeshiva, they'll teach them the opposite. That this is the right way and this is the wrong way. And this is more important and this is less important. So they're going to face lots of confusion. So instead of just focusing on echsherim, you have to take the kids from a very young age and explain to them that the Torah was given to us as a nation, to the chachamim, and there's big arguments, there's machlokot about it, and it's not taking away from the beauty of the Torah and the emes of the Torah. It's still the word of Hashem, and Hashem wanted people to argue, to search for the truth, and as long as his big talmidei chachamim that learn Torah, and that's why they came with the psak, we have to accept and respect all of them, chas v'shalom, not to put anybody else down just because we don't go by his way or by his psak. But the most important thing, we go in this way and we follow it and we constant with that. Whatever they do, it's their business. It doesn't mean we are better than them, but this is the way we are doing. And that's it. And by the way, people are fighting so much about echsherim and they say, this is not good, this is not good. Most of the time it's incorrect, it's lashon hara, it's motzi shemra, you know. And I give you an example. In Eretz Yisrael, there's a very big Talmid Chacham. He's Av Bedin, a very serious Talmid Chacham. He has shelot and tshuvot. You see his brilliance in Torah. So he said that he went to check about the kashrut rabbanut, not badatz. In Israel, when you say rabbanut, it's like almost not kosher. That's how people think. He went to check rabbanut, and he was better than the badatz that he thought that is one of the best one. He said in the end the kashrut of them was better. So he said, why you put an X on all the mashgichim over there? You tell like they shagets, they're not doing the right job. In the end they did a fantastic job. It doesn't mean that every rabbanut is good. We don't know. Everything has to be checked. But one thing you have to know for sure. You know, we have a background music. One thing you have to know for sure. Not everything you hear on the news is true. Especially in Eretz Israel today, everybody say about the meat of the other that it's treif. Technically, every meat you get in Eretz Israel, there is somebody who claims it's treif. Based on that, we won't eat meat ever. Why? Because there's always someone. Here in America, once I called the Talmid Chacham, and I asked him, he's a poisek. I asked him about a certain Ashgacha, Bet Yosef or Sfaradim, that eat Bet Yosef only. He said to me, if I was a Sfaradi, I would be afraid to eat from it because it's a fake taref. Obviously, I took his word, I stopped buying there. Years later, they said on the news that they caught this posek, that he was making people eat taref. So now who you believe, him or him? It's confusing, very confusing. You have to have one Talmid Chacham, who is your rabbi, you trust him, he's Yireh Shamayim, he's not a politician, he's not after you for your money, you know he's Yireh Shamayim, he's a tzaddik. You ask him, tell me what kashrut to eat. This is okay for me? He said, yes, that's it, no more investigation. You don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to go into the factory and check every move they make. For that, you have expert, just like you trust your doctor, just like you trust your accountant. When it comes to this, Rabbi, you know about this. I don't know. Is this meat kosher? Yes, you can eat it. But people speak bad about it. I tell you, it's good. Fine. End of story. If it's a Talmid Chacham and a Tzaddik. Not someone that has his shechita, that he wants you to buy it because he makes money. We're talking, there's a lot of politics here. But I don't want to confuse you too much, because there are many things that the audience do not know and the public do not know. To 6 years old? Oh, to 6 years old is a different story. That's not the question here. Ah, you're talking about the Ashgacha. Okay, I didn't pay attention to that detail. Okay, to a 6 years old is what I said in the beginning. You don't tell him the whole nine yard. You just tell him there's different opinions, different rabbis that some allowed, some not allowed. We go by our rabbi. This is what the Torah says. We follow this shita and in everything we do like him. That's it. And who follow it? We follow. You are son. You follow your parents, and your children will follow you, and their children will follow them. And this is the way the Torah is. That's it. Okay. Any more questions? No. Actually, it's written, so we're gonna go to the next question.
My first question is: how do you learn to connect with your spouse without having had a role model? Now, obviously, having a role model will certainly help. But I don't think that's really the main question without having a role model. It's just the ultimate question of how to connect with a spouse. Now those, I just spent an hour explaining that. So you go on Torah any time, you'll see the whole class. But in a nutshell, connecting with a spouse. First of all, there's an important thing to note, that there's no yes or no in a relationship. That means, do I have a relationship with my spouse or I don't? Oh, I do, then I'm good. I don't yet. It's not, do I have one or don't I have? It's, you can always get better. Not you could, you should. A relationship is not you either have it or you don't have it. Everyone has relationships. Low-level relationships. You can have more and more and more. And Ein Sof, you're always building your relationship. The question is how you do it. As I said, I'm not going to spend too much time because there's many questions. I'd say the most important thing, is, as I mentioned before, is spending time with each other, not talking about anything which matters. When you build a relationship with someone, and you go out with your spouse on a date night, and you start sharing all your problems with each other, and the conclusion is basically, then let's go for professional help. If that's the discussion. But if the discussion is, I'm here just to spend time with you, then some people look at it and say, we're wasting time, we're not talking about anything. That's the best way to build a relationship, by talking about things which matter the least, and that's what's going to build your love the most, because we're just here to spend time with each other. So that's with a spouse, and the same goes with Hashem, obviously, although that's not the question, but I just have to throw it in, spending time with Hashem, without speaking anything heavy, just talking to Hashem, so easy, friendly, how much you love Hashem for taking care of you. That's the best way you build relationships.
So, next question.
Do you know if and how much and how emotions play a role in next world?
Oh, so
repeat the question.
Do you know how much emotions play a role in the next world? Now, when the world, the next world, has to be clarified. What does it mean, the next world? So, you know, there are a few steps that the neshama go through when a person dies, right? Sometimes he goes to heaven, sometimes to the opposite side, depending on his actions. And then there will be resurrection of the dead, so he will come back in a body without Yetzer Hara, which means we're going back to the level of Adam HaRishon before the sin, which is higher than Gan Eden, what we call Gan Eden or heaven in English. It's going to be an upgrade where they are right now learning and enjoying. It's a more fantastic place, but it's temporary. Then when there will be the Trias HaMetim, they come back in a body without Yetzer Hara, and this is upgrade to the Neshama. And then there will be the final step, what we call Olam Haba, Olam HaNeshamot, Olam HaNetzach. It has all different kinds of names. So which one of those you are referring to? You're referring to right now where the tzaddikim are waiting for Triat HaMetim?
I want to know if there's any relationships
with that. Oh, so that's the question, relationships, because I thought you were speaking about...
Also, I think
you're
going to
have Triat HaMetim, and then you're going to have...
Olam Haba.
Yeah.
People are going to die?
Yes, final. That will be final death. Right now, the death is temporary until Triat HaMetim. Once the person will come back without Yetzer Hara, and they would live here for 1,000 years, it's Elef Hashvi, without dying, without giving birth, without Yetzer Hara, without depression, without Prozac, without Gilgulim anymore, without IRS.
Can I put in a word?
Yeah, yeah, please.
I know this is a little emotional subject, especially for the side of the Mechitza. I'd just like to focus a moment just to explain that Baruch Hashem, we love ourselves, we're very into our bodies, and we talk a lot about building relationships. And we understand it on the level we live in today. And we can't understand beyond that. It is a heavy topic, and you were the one that brought it up. So we have to explain it. But it's not as scary as it sounds if we really understand what life is about, that we're not about our bodies. Our body is only here to serve the real you, which is your soul. However, everything we have in this world, as in the body, is all an example to understand the real you. The real you is the soul, the real you is the neshama. That's who you really are. And we're here a couple of years in this world, hopefully 120. I'll give you all 130 if you really want. But that's not the real life. It's to build the real you. The real you is your neshama. Now your neshama is also building relationships with the ultimate relationship, which is Hashem. So when we climb out of that body, then we're really free. Then, as Rabbi Mizrahi just said, there were no Prozac because you don't need that for the neshama. Then there's going to be a level of relationships with Hashem, a level of happiness and clarity without the body. The body is only here to build the real you. The real you is your neshama.
So now...
I just wanted to get out of the body feeling and understand that the real you is your neshama, and you have that relationship with Hashem in the world to come.
So you don't need emotion to connect with Hashem afterlife.
If then you'll need emotions,
then
you're not going to build it anymore. Now's the time to build your relationship. When you're there, we reap the nachas. We reap the relationship of what we've done in this world. It's the tools.
Yeah.
The tools to be there. Once you're there, we have an awesome relationship based on how much we've done in this world. Which is beautiful.
But there are, by the way, there are emotions when a person is in Gan Eden. Hashem say, who is going to go down to be mefate Ahav. Ahav, he murdered Navot. He had a vineyard, and Ahav and Izebel, they wanted his field, and they went and killed him and took it. This is what we say, Ratzachta v'gam Yarashta, you murder and you also took his property. So Hashem say, who wants to go, and this is in Gan Eden, Hashem say, who wants to go and set a trap to Ahav to be mefate him, that I can kill him and give him what he deserves. And he wants to go and take revenge against the person who killed him while he is in Gan Eden, meaning the revenge, which is emotion, is still exists. Even when people in Olam Haba, they still remain with the same feelings and emotions and midot that they had in this world. Do you understand? So this is an example, and that's when Hashem say to him, Tse mim chitzati, you don't deserve to be here. You're here in Gan Eden enjoying from my greatness and you're still thinking about going to take revenge from this Rasha. Hashem say, Tse, Chazal explained, Tse mim chitzati. You just lost your right to be in Gan Eden. So actually he went against himself. So we see from here there's emotions. How the emotions work, probably different than here. Because over here the emotions are influenced tremendously from our Yetzer Hara and desires, which doesn't exist in Olam Haba. Let me explain to you what I mean. Right now, a person has emotions that are built sometimes based on phony things. Phony things. For instance, if a man described himself to his future fiance as his minimum the Rambam, you know, he's this and he's holy, he's in 5 o'clock in a mikveh already, and he's ready an hour to the next minyan, and so she's actually falling in love with him based on false information that is entered to her. And then obviously later on she begins to realize it wasn't exactly the way it was described to her. right? So you see over here that a lot of the emotions is built on a lie. But in Olam HaEmet, there's no such thing, lies. You understand? Everything over there is pure and truth, 100%. So over here, the emotions can be, a lot of them can be based on mistakes. In Olam HaEmet, if there are emotions, if somebody develop any emotion, it cannot come from a lie. It has to come from real reality. You understand? I know it's a little confusing, but there are emotions. But you ask also another question about a relationship. This is a very, very hard question, what you ask. And even the Chachamim are confused about it, and I'll tell you why. When a person will come in a resurrection of the dead, which one of his wife is going to come back with? He had five different wives in five different Gilgulim. Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, and Miriam. Now, they all woke up, they're all righteous. So they all came back, and they stand over here. Moishi! And she calls him Reuven. And she calls him Yitzchak. And he said, who I am? Reuven or Yitzchak? You know? So, okay, so imagine now this. He came back five times in his lifetime, and there are five different women, and now it's Reuven, Yitzchak. It's all the same neshama. Are all five bodies come out? Only the most righteous body comes out, or the recent body comes out, or all bodies come out. This machloket, big machlokot between the big rabbis, because it's not so clear. One say only a gufa acharon. One say the most righteous body. One say all the bodies. It's no problem for Hashem. The neshama can be in 1,000 different bodies with so many examples. So let's go for one scenario that all five got up. So we have the same person in five different bodies right now. The neshama is a little bit here. It's like fire. You can take as much as you want and make candles. The fire is still the same. So you have now five people, and they're actually one person. And then you have five with different women. So every woman to the body that she used to be married to, no problem. But what happened if only one gets up? And all five got up, the women, five different women from five different lifetimes. Which one of them he will be married to? They all wants to go back to him. There's a lot of confusion here. You understand? All these questions we will know only when it happens. Because there's so many arguments about it.
The soul can understand. A human being, a living, can understand that. As much as you understand, you still don't understand.
I don't understand that. I want to tell you one thing. I detected you from the first lecture that I gave, that you came to me after the lecture. You are the type, you want answers now. If it's another hour, you're going crazy about it. You have to have patience. We are not God and we're not angels, and not everything we know. Not everything we know. Some of the things we'll know when the time comes. That's it. The Gemara in Chagigah say, there are questions you don't even ask. The time will come. The mind. It's curiosity. It's curiosity. Not everything we know. Yes.
But the last speech, Rabbi Mizrahi told us that the person does not write it, will stay for 1,000 years. And all the rabbi who says that everything is good and Hashem loves you. Don't you, Rabbi, think that there is such a thing as tshuva, and we can erase things what was done 1,000 years ago?
Well, I spoke about tshuva at least 20,000 times. I mean, I have hundreds of lectures about it.
But you left us here with knowing that Averos will stay with us forever.
No, we didn't say Averos. No, we say what we see. It's recorded in our subconscious forever, meaning even if somebody hypnotizes you now and is doing regression, it brings you to your previous life when you are 100% a tzaddik today, or even you made tshuva in your previous life, all the bad things that you looked in your life is all recorded in the neshama. You cannot delete it. It stays forever and it affects person's choices in life. You know, I give you an example, Balei Tshuva. They have much, much harder times to get married than Hasidim from birth. A Hasid from birth, he doesn't know anything from his life about women. He's 18 years old, he was in yeshiva all his life. His parents raised him in a kosher environment. Today it's changing because of the internet. But let's go back 20 years ago when there was no garbage, no internet, no Facebook. You know, the world was more modest. The way the Hasidim grew up in a primitive environment, no connection to the dirty world. You take a Hasid, a boy, and a Hasid, a girl, they don't know anything from their life about what all the illusions that the world has to offer. They sit in front of each other. They don't know what to compare to. She sees Yireh Shamayim, he sees Tzadeket. and they don't know what it means. If she's the best, she's not the best. It's really for him in his mind, this is the best that can happen to me right now, an opportunity to get married. So he doesn't have anything that confuses him because he doesn't have a record. So if he likes her, and most likely he will because it's the first girl he's looking at in his life, sitting one step away from him and talking to her, and she is the same situation, so she's right, probably would like him because everything is pure. They will have a wonderful connection and they get married. However, in a Baal Tshuva, they used to make scenes with women, and he used to go with this pretty woman and this one and make averos, and one day he became a Baal Tshuva and he's trying to forget his past. He has horrible time to find the right shidduch. Everyone that comes, he compares to Christine and to the other garbage that he had, and it drives him crazy. And that's why a lot of the Baal Tshuva suffer so much in their marriages, and they cannot find a shidduch. So, Rabbi, I used to go this, I used to do this, they're giving me this woman, it's nothing that I would ever agree to go with. Why? Because the more he did, the more he's confused. You understand? Now the same thing over here. When a person has in his subconscious a lot of dirty pictures that he's looking at in a computer or on the street, without realizing, it's affecting your life, it's affecting the way you daven, it's affecting the way you wake up in the morning, it's affecting if to go or not to go to the mikveh, it's affecting your relationship with your own wife, it's destroying you without realizing it. That's what we talked about. We didn't talk about tshuva, not tshuva.
We talk about Hashem, this punishment, and Hashem will take care of every little sin you do. We did that.
Unless if you didn't do, if you did tshuva, that's it. There's no more sins.
Also, then the rabbis who say that Hashem loves you once you do tshuva, they are, right?
Well, after you do tshuva, you're greater than a person that even never sinned. Bemakom shebaalei tshuva omdim, afilu tzadikim gmurim enam omdim. That's one solid root in Judaism. The tshuva is above everything. You can even be a murderer and do tshuva and Hashem accept you. Any Mechal Shabbat, the biggest averos in the Torah, the tshuva helps.
If I may add, you just use the words, if Hashem loves you. Now, of course, if without doing tshuva, the punishments are still there. But even without tshuva, the punishments may be there. He loves you no end. And that Jews still also loves you. His love didn't change at all with averos or without averos. He loves you no end. And I'll explain to you that in a relationship...
Does Rabbi Mizrahi agree with that?
I'm not so sure. Yeah. I'm okay to disagree.
Because...
Does Hashem love us when we do our various? Absolutely, in my eyes.
In a Gemara...
Will he still punish us? Because we need the consequence, because it's a natural consequence of what happens when we mess up. But Hashem still loves us.
I think Rabbi Mizrahi has a different point.
Well, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim and meant Hashem to him.
No, I want to tell you
and one thing. And he loved us.
It's a matter how you define he loves us. That's the only difference between me and the rabbi here, is what does it mean Hashem loves us? I'll give you an example. You have a kid that is off the derech. It's still your son. You still love him. You're not wishing him to die or to have bad things. You care very much about what he does, and it burns your heart. That's a sign that you love him and you care about him. But at the same time, God forbid, if you had now, if a goy would come with a gun, and you have a tzaddik, a boy, learns in yeshiva and gives his life for Hashem, yirei shamayim, and you have this drug addict, drug dealer, chas v'shalom, your son became mechalel Shabbos, he's living with a goya and he made tattoos, you still love him and everything he does kills you, but you have to make you decide which one of them would live and which not one of them would leave the world. What are you going to say? Take the tzaddik that learns in yeshiva and give his life for Hashem and kill him, chas v'shalom, and let the other one continue with his crimes? So obviously even a father will prefer one of the two. And that's what the Gemara is full of. The Gemara says in the language of Chazal, not me, I'm nothing. The Chazal say, Hashem sone et ha-reshaim. And they give an example, who Hashem sone, Chazal. He sone gaftanim. Gval lev oto lo uchal. I cannot stand a proud person. Et Esav saneti. I hate Esav. And I can give you at least 1,000 examples that it says in the Torah, in the Navi, and in the Gemara, there are Jews that Hashem hates. It doesn't mean hates because of his face, or hate because of his size, or hate because he's not smart. No, or because Hashem is racist. That's not this kind of hate. It's hate, really, what it really means is disappointment. So we're really saying the same thing, just in a different... in a different way. It's like disappointment. You still love your sinner son, you still want to help him, but you are very disappointed from him. And this disappointment called in the language of Chazal, soneh. You understand? That's all.
I mentioned before relationships. I just want to explain again with the relationship. As you were saying, there's someone who Cholila has a son after there. If someone would say, my son hasn't spoken to me for 20 years, but I still love my child, that makes sense, such a statement. But if someone says, my son hasn't spoken to me for 20 years, but we still have a great relationship, that doesn't make sense, okay? A relationship is always determined with two people. Not just it's determined with two people, it's always determined by the lesser of the two. The lesser of the two determines the relationship. Because a relationship is only with two people. So if someone loves someone else and the other person only likes that person, we can't work it out in numbers. If there's 80% love and 70% love, that the relationship is on a 70% level, because a relationship has to go both ways. So that's the love with Hashem. Hashem can't have a relationship with people who do avirus, because you're not loving back. And that's why Hashem hates. It's not healing. Hashem is pouring unbelievable amount of love to this person because he's still Hashem's child. But if there's no relationship, there can't be real love. But it's determined by the lesser of the two.
Yes, please.
I have a question about other relationships. We are at an age, my friends, that we all got married at 18. Like you're saying, we were Hasidic girls, you know, and fine. We didn't really know who we were or what. You know, what was our interest or what was our philosophy? We raised our kids, so it was easy to just go, you know, and you kind of convince yourself that you're, you know, because you have to raise your kids. Then the kids get married. And all the years ago, people died at 30. They were married for what? 12 years, fine, you know. You realize that you grew to be two different people. You are not the same girl that you were at 18 years old. You are just not the same person. And your husband may have stayed the same, but now you are not the same, or the opposite. And don't tell me you just have to keep the relationship and talk to each other, because you just don't feel, and you just, like, whatever you like, he hates. Whatever he hates, you like. And people just start growing apart more and more and more, and they start harboring a lot of resentment, because we're really different people. We live together for so many years now. We're married for so many years.
You describe the situation, but what's your question? Because in what you describe, I can find 500 questions.
My question.
Focus on one question. What do you do? If you should stay married or to get divorced?
No,
that's the question.
No. What do you
How do you fix this? You don't expect to answer in 5 minutes such a question. This is a 10 hours answer. But maybe me and the rabbi will try to give you a minute each about this question. We'll start with that. Is that some people, when they get married, it's because they are pushed into the marriage. That's a very common mistake by the Haredi world. Not only Hasidish, by the Haredi world. It's good, he's a Talmid Chacham, he's great, marry him, you should marry him. Why you don't want? You should, you're going to stay without a good shidduch, you never have such an opportunity. What does she know from her life? She marry him, she doesn't have feelings for him. They pushed her in, or the Shatchan was pushing, or the Rabbi was pushing, whatever the case was, and they stuck for life. You have to be very careful not to push your children to something they're not sure about. It's their life, you can destroy it. That's number one. Number two, assuming it's the right shidduch, and they really liked each other, and then they develop differently, right? So first of all, what's the big deal? So one person develop to more these kind of things, and one person develop, so what, that means that their marriage is not good? He loves this, and she loves this, so what's the big deal?
One person
has a life,
he has right.
No common ground.
One person
right.
Is on a much higher level than
another. They live parallel to each other.
Oh, wait. Okay, so let's say the husband became very, very big, holy, kadosh, and the wife is not exactly, or the other way around, right? But they still can be intimate together, they still love each other, they still help each other. What? Everybody has to be a genius, genius and genius, and spiritual and spiritual, and it has to be always the same? So what? So
there has to be something there that
But so all the Gdolei Ador, the big Chachamim, the big chief rabbis of the world, you cannot compare them in a level to their wives. No matter how great the wives are, they don't know 1% of Torah than what their husband knows. But they still live with them in harmony and peace. Not true. The common ground is not the same. I give you an example. Rav Ben Zion Abba Shaul was the giant Chacham and a very holy Mekubal, and he was sitting in a kitchen with his wife, peeling okra and talking to her about all the nonsense she used to do, going to pay the phone bill. What does it have to do with this? It's pure Bitul Torah for him. He brought himself to the level of his wife to keep the continuation, the relationship going. That's the way it is. You have to know. You're dealing with a woman, you have to talk to her in a language she connects and what's interest her. If she bought something, you have to talk about her for 15 minutes, even if it's pure Bitul Torah. If she wants a little attention, you have to put the Gemara on the side and give her the love and the attention. It's not enough to be just in a high level. You have to learn what is the obligation in a marriage. We have many, many lectures about this. It's very, very long answer to your question. Maybe the rabbi wants to add something to this question.
I think you took both 2 minutes for yourself. So.
No, so take 2 minutes also.
No, I'm fine, because the answer is, as you said, it takes more than 10 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the example we gave, and I know you probably hit it many times, the opposites attract, so it's not going to help. That's not going to help if I just say that word. I know that. But when you say parallel, and you just say living life parallel, it's just the opposite, because you have a stack of cards. Those are parallel and they look beautiful, nice stack of cards. But if you pick it up, one blow of the wind, it just flies away. But a puzzle, which is tightly connected, then it's jagged and sticking out. And two of you together, that's what holds it. That's what holds it together. Now, I didn't explain it, but just to show you the analogy, that's the only way it works. Of course, you need common ground. You need a lot of common ground. But the fact that you do different things, that's not what a marriage is. I enjoy football and you enjoy soccer. You know what I mean? Well, I like sushi, you like pizza. And therefore, why do we go to eat together? We have no common ground. But it's more about understanding each other's needs, and as Rabbi Mizrahi just said, I wouldn't use the word lower yourself to Hashtusim. It's understanding the wife's feelings, and therefore let's talk about, as I mentioned before, things which don't even matter. Because marriage isn't about the big things which matter, and that's how we're going to build our relationship together. It's about us. We are one. We're one. So there's many body parts. You have a hand, you have a foot, you have a spouse. We're one. So therefore it's not about we look differently and we have different feelings. We care about each other much deeper than the things we do. And I like this type and I'm this type of person, you're that type of person. We just care for each other because we're really one. But again, how to get there is yes, at least a 10-hour talk. How to get there being one. But it's about being one. It's not about what things you enjoy doing with each other.
Shallow levels.
I understand. Again, spiritual, we are one soul. Again, I'm sorry. I understand. I just use it as an example. I understand.
You're passionate about different things. You like philosophies different.
So ultimately, we have the same soul. You still believe in the same basics.
So you read your books and you read his Gemara. What's the...
You have the same basics.
You can still love each other, you can still
with the spiritual soul, you're still one because you both believe in the same God.
But it's not what you want. You want to have more than, oh yeah.
What do you want to do? You want to learn chevruta with your husband and this masechet, but it's too difficult for him, so you want this masechet, so it's confusing you. So what? So there's different levels in spirituality. I don't see a contradiction here. You can still do wonderful things together. You can still do wonderful things together. Any more questions before we go into what we have already written here?
Sure, I'll take this question.
Yeah, take one question until I read this. Okay.
And the next question I have here is, for what reason should we send, by the way, should is spelled S-H with an O, it's missing an O, so just for the record. What reason should we send our child to the school/yeshiva that we learned as a child, and we know we wasted most of our childhood? Why should I send my children to the same place we went to? And we know very well what we did there. Now, it's a much deeper question, and I'll explain to you why it's a deep question. Obviously, if it's not a good place, it's really not a good place, then you shouldn't be sending there. But I think the question is also, it's not such a bad place. There could be better places, and the it's not the best place, and most people waste their time there. Why I'm saying it's a deeper question, because unfortunately, most of us give over our chinuch to the moisters. You know, we want to do live our lives. I'm paying tuition. You take care of my children. And, you know, you're not so happy the way they grow up because I was there. It wasn't the best place for me. They wasted out their lives. And maybe we should tend to something better, which is really going to build our children. Us, as parents, we are the real mechanchim. The schools are there to help us. You know, during the day when we're busy, you send them to the babysitter for a few hours, spend time in the chayda and yeshiva. But the real chinuch, the real morals and ethics and everything you want to instill in your child, the parent does. And if we want to be lazy, we just say, let the children, you know, let the moisters take care of them. It's a very good question. Why should I send them to this moisted? They're not the ones really being mechanach our children, and it's really the job of the parent to put in the most effort. And therefore, if it's not a terrible place, of course, if it's a terrible place, you don't send them there. If it's not a terrible place, the main chinuch, it's the job of the parent to do, not the mechanchim and not the moisset.
The grass is greener on the other
side. Not always. The grass is greener on the other side.
You know what's green, yeah. You don't know what's
green. Maybe you take a questions until I read, because it's long questions here. Ooh, huh? That's a Megillah.
Send question. My 9-year-old daughter doesn't like to sit by the Shabbos table. How long should we insist that she stays by the table? My 9-year-old daughter, how long should we insist? I try not to force my children to eat ice cream. I mean, if they're getting older and they really don't like children and ice cream, sometimes I shove it down their throat. I don't. Is a Shabbos table something which is like the Rebbe's tish? And they're still young, so they're still 9 years old, and maybe they shouldn't be there. Well, maybe by 9 years old, they should be ready by the tish. Shabbos table, they should want to come. You shouldn't insist your 15-year-old to stay 1 minute. But your 2-year-old should want to be there the whole time. You don't need to insist your children to be there by the Shabbos table at all. If your children are not at your Shabbos table, you should insist yourself, make the Shabbos table more exciting. Come up with an idea why. You know what, you can make your Shabbos table more exciting so they should want to. Never insist any of your children to come at 9 and not by when they're 18. But if your Shabbos table is exciting and there's the candies for the 2-year-olds, there's the Uncle Moshe songs for the 5-year-olds, and if you have Bukhrim and Yeshiva and they like the long songs which they sing by the tish, you add that too. So you have every element. And you're allowed to dance also, and you're allowed to run around the table and dance around the table to make it interesting. Never insist at all they have to come. They should want to come, and if they don't want to come, think it over how your Shabbos table looks.
What? This one. What did she write here? Strong, she meant? High. But the husband is anxious and high.
Yeah, I think maybe strong.
We have a question here. Somebody is asking that the children do not respect the father because he's anxious and too strong. I guess that's what they meant here. And, you know, if the husband doesn't get help, he's too anxious because he's blaming the wife and the children for his anxiety. How should the wife deal with it to get her husband to act responsible? Okay, so it's two issues here. One is anxious, one responsible. Okay, to get her children to respect husband, even if only because it's a mitzvah from the Torah with a question mark. Is that the right thing? Or to respect him because of other reasons? I guess that's the question. Also, she tries sticking up for her husband, and the kids feel that she's not protecting them. So she has a conflict between the husband and the children. All right, so this is a unique question. Some people are anxious, some people are OCD, some people are too uptight, some people are too pedantic, some people are angry, some people are too makpid, and there's causing problems sometimes between the father and the children. sometimes fathers mean well, but they destroy their children by the way they're too strict with them. You know, and sometimes it's just because the father has his mental issue himself, and he takes his frustration on his own children and also making them a damage. The wife sometimes has to be between the wife and between the husband and the children. So over here, if a person has a mental issue, anxiety, he needs to be treated. He needs to be treated for this issue. This issue doesn't usually go away by itself. It needs to be treated. That's one thing. Now, the next thing is, she's sticking for husband, that's her obligation. She has to stick for husband, whether it's 100%, whether it's 80%. She has to do it. The kids must respect their parents, whether their parents are perfect or whether they are far from being perfect. So the kids has to be educated. This is your father, this is what Hashem gave you. Take the good with the bad. This is the way it is. Don't think that other kids have parents that are better. Everyone has his own issues. So the kids must be taught to respect their parents, whether your father is a big rebbe, whether he's a shoemaker, whether he's a driver, whether he's the biggest tzaddik, or whether he's half and half. That's the way the halacha requires. You have to do it. Now, the children, sometimes they take advantage on their parents. How do they do it? By making the parents feel guilty. They're making the parents feel guilty. You don't love me, you don't do this for me, you didn't protect me. Not everything should make you too nervous. The kids are the master of deceiving sometimes. They come, they trick you, they get a little bit from the husband, and they get from the wife, and they know what they can get here and what they can get there. Not everything they say you have to go and make a whole investigation about it. There are certain situations that you have to deal with that seriously. A lot of the things they say, it's a heat of the moment. An hour later, they don't even remember they say it. Problem with people, they panic too much. Oh, did you hear what the boy said? Did you hear what the girl said? Did you hear this? Did you hear that? Not everything they say, you have to dance according to their music. They don't run the show. They have to give it a lot of love, the kids, a lot of love, especially in this generation. But they have to know there are boundaries and there are rules, and they have to stick to the rules. If they're not sticking to the rule, they have to know there are consequences. You give them everything they want, you let them disrespect some of the parents, sometimes it can be against the mother. You cooperate with them just because you're afraid not to hurt them and upset them, that's a mistake. You don't surrender to negative things. You have to talk a lot and to say the right thing. Maybe the rabbi wants to add anything to it.
But I think what she was asking is, what if the father is anxious, or he's hurting the kids, he's harming the kids?
He needs to be treated. Must be treated.
And he refuses to go. He thinks therapists and things like that are just...
I tell you something, Reuven is suing Shimon for money. And Reuven called the rabbi, the Dayan, and he say, I want you to help me to get my money back from Shimon. So the rabbi say, you and Shimon come to my Beit Din tomorrow 9:00. So Reuven say, Shimon doesn't want to come. Help me anyway. So what does the rabbi gonna say to him? How can I help you if the person that owe you money doesn't come? Right, if the husband doesn't want to be treated, what do you expect me to answer? It's nothing to do, to be done.
That's the problem. How do we help? By the kids, what tells them?
People that have an issue and they don't want to be treated is a very serious problem. The only way to force them to be treated is by force. Force, I don't mean literally force, meaning threats. Listen, if this is what you're going to continue to do to the children and you don't want to see anyone and be treated, I don't think it's safe that we will still marriage, because I have an obligation, we're still married, I have an obligation to save my children. If you're going to continue like this another 5 years, you'll destroy 6 children over here. If that's the price I have to pay from losing you and save my children, that's what I'm going to do. So you either be treated or we go to the rabbi to start the process of being divorced. Maybe that would move him. If he still say, okay, I don't care, let's get divorced.
Pull out.
Excuse me?
Pull doesn't work for all husbands.
So they will agree to get divorced?
They know it's a threat, only. It's an empty threat.
I tell you something. A husband that loves his wife, and she asks, fine, okay, a husband, we have 5 minutes left, gentlemen, please. A husband that loves his wife, if it's real love, and she asks him to run the marathon for him, you know, run the marathon, 40 kilometers for me, or I leave, he will do it. Why? For the love, you sacrifice a lot in life.
Because the wife,
huh?
When she says
thing
about divorce, she's not really...
One second.
Right.
Wait.
The panel will close in 5 minutes. Right afterwards, please, you can take something to Tanash and head over to the crown. And Smedish, keynote is starting exactly 12:45.
I didn't finish to answer. Okay, so if the husband said to his wife, okay, you want to get divorced, let's get divorced, and they get there and he goes on with the plan, that means he doesn't love it.
No,
she has to mean it.
She is much less independent. The husband knows that she's not good. They just want to leave.
If the husband is a threat to the children, if the husband is a threat to the children, it doesn't matter Hasidish or Litvish or anything. If it's a threat, Chas v'shalom. There are fathers, excuse me?
What's the definition of threat?
Oh, okay, sometimes you have to come to the rabbi to decide if he's a threat. Because half of the times that the women told me that the husband is a threat to the children, it was not a threat at all. He did what the halacha required. Alright? Or the other way around. When a person told me my wife is crazy and she's not normal and I want her to see a psychiatrist, and when he brought her in, I found out that she's much more normal than him. So you have to go to a specialist, a rabbi that knows how to handle these things, and to hear everything, to hear the words he's using, to hear the verbal abuse, to hear the physical abuse. And sometimes the rabbi will need to talk to the children and to see the impact of his actions. And after that, he has to tell him, you must be treated. And if he refuses, then the woman has the right to go to proceed with the threat to get divorced to save the children. That's what needs to be done. Now, if you're telling me Hasidish women don't have this power to get divorced, I disagree. Hasidish women get divorced, unfortunately, every week in the world. If they could, this woman can also do. Maybe it's harder, but it's possible. Yes?
She can get certain advice, how to heal, and how to,
you know, to get, change yourself, and you change your world, to get it. And as you say, sometimes the husband is not even a threat, it's just that the wife is a magic.
Right.
So first, even if the husband doesn't want to come, the wife is first, you know, start with the goal. Of course. And that's why whoever wrote this question is asking this question to be able to know how to handle it, what to do, what not to do. Obviously, in 5 or 10 minutes answer, you cannot give her all the things she needs. She has to go to rabbis who knows about relationship and raising children.
Is it sure that her husband is better?
No, I understood you.
Husband, or she's just, you know.
Okay, I'll just give me a chance to answer. So the point is, she has to go to somebody, their rabbi or a special rabbi in a community that knows about this thing, and ask him to give her advice based on what she described. And from there on, every case needs a special advice. It's not a general answer. It depends on what is done, who's the couple, how old are the children. Oh, there's a lot of things that have to be considered here.
You know what a rabbi in a community told such a woman?
Shh. Yes.
The husband, you know, is anxious. He was brought up in a certain way, and that's how he does it. He told her she should take Xanax so she can stand to live with. Okay? Real stuff, real.
It's better I won't repeat it.
But that's what
last question from the men's side.
Shh.
We have 2 minutes left. You don't want to hear another question? Loud.
Should the subject of a minah be approached to a child that has no questions? That didn't say he has questions.
Yeah, of course. What's the question? Go ahead, Rabbi.
Should the subject of a minah be approached to children even if they don't have questions?
Or if they don't ask
questions. Or if they don't ask. Thank you. I was about to say that. Or they don't ask the questions. So the truth is, there are two types of people. There may be children that don't have, there may be. In general, the answer would be that don't ask the question, and therefore absolutely yes. Even those who actually don't have, then still yes, absolutely, because they should be proud of our heritage. In other words, I think the parents are sometimes afraid to talk about it because the parents themselves are not so comfortable with the subject because they don't know and they're not so sure if we're doing the right thing. And therefore it's a comfortable question, not because of the kids, it might be uncomfortable for yourself. That's why we're afraid to ask the question. So should children know? That isn't the question. We're uncomfortable with it. But absolutely, teach your children the beauty of Yiddishkeit, and not just the beauty, teach them the truthness of Yiddishkeit, and go over with them the steps that there was a Matan Torah in public, a national revelation, and we are the only religion which makes sense, and we're allowed to have the Avodah Zarah, which means making fun. Obviously, we're not allowed to make fun. Latsunas is also, you're not allowed to make fun of other people. But the Gemara says you're allowed to make latsunas of Avodah Zarah. Come up with their theories and laugh about how their things came up, and it's all a joke, and there's nothing behind it. And absolutely, there's a chiyuv to teach our children that minute. We just had all Yom Tov in the Pesach. It isn't just for those who ask. Okay, we had the Dalad Munim. It wasn't just about the Chuchim that wants to know, or the Lusha that has the questions but is upset. Tam and Shaini Da'alish are exactly the same. They don't have the questions, and even if they're not interested in Shaini Da'alish, they don't even, honestly, they're just not interested. They're simple people, they don't ask. Inspire them, instill in them, and minister Hashem, absolutely.
I know it's more the proof part.
That's the amina. Not believing, that's the idea. The chiyuv of knowing.
Okay, that's it. Thank you very much.